It's all Satan's plan, I tell you. It's the devil. The devil's doing this. His name is Mark Zuckerman.
B.L. Zuckerman?
Bob? The Prince of Mark Zuckerman, the old scratch principal. I'm just trying to find other names for Satan that we can turn into Zuckerman. I can't think of any. Beelzebub, Prince of Lies.
The Prince of Markness.
Old Scratch.
Zuckerfer.
Zuckerfer.
Prince of Markness.
Ah, there you go.
Prince of Markness episode title.
Writing it down.
Oh.
Welcome to Nerd Burger, episode 18. I'm Mike.
I'm Craig.
And here we are.
Episode 18.
Woo, we're legal.
In all states. We were legal previously in some states.
Mostly in the South.
Whoa.
Hey.
We can say that because we live here.
That's right.
Oh.
How's it going, Craig?
It's going pretty good. Interesting news, but we'll talk about that once we get the guest on board here.
We have a guest?
Yes, we do. Do you want to talk to him?
That's no.
Not a trick question.
No, I don't want to talk to you. Well, fine. I'll just leave then.
All right. And we welcome back Josh, who was on the podcast previously. In an episode where the audio went wonky.
Yeah, hopefully I'm not jinxing the equipment or something.
Yeah, we're going to try to not do that this time.
Oh, I hope that's real wood. Oh, shit, that was IKEA.
Okay, that's wood.
We're covered now.
So, welcome back, Josh.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
Thank you for joining us. So, Mike, you had an anecdote.
Yes. I have a TV.
A anecdote. Humorous story.
Mm-hmm. So I was watching, you know that the wife and I watch The Burn Notice.
Yes.
Josh, the
yes.
wife and I watch The Burn Notice.
The Burn Notice is a good show.
You watch it.
I'm not fully up to date, but
Craig
yeah.
tried watching it.
I got like halfway through season three and then I got like something shiny appeared in the room and well, I ran away to watch that and never went back to Burn Notice.
Well, Burn Notice, there's a definite formula and I can see getting tired of it after a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's it's in Miami. It's very pretty. Everything's very, nice to look at. All the scenery and everything. And
right. Okay,
it's
so
funny. It's got Bruce Campbell in it, Yeah. I mean,
Bruce Campbell checking out that scenery very closely.
Well, I meant more the actual scenery and not but yeah, that too. So
So
we watched it and now this is last week's episode, not this week's episode. But we haven't watched this week's episode yet, so last week's episode is still fresh in my mind. But anyway, so they got this thing going on. They're in Cuba. They had to rescue this rogue Russian spy, who happens to be like 22 years old, blonde and super hot, wearing
like they are
really tight pants. Like, she was being held in some makeshift prison in some secret KGB site in a warehouse somewhere. Anyway, so they rescue her, and now there's this this Russian colonel that gets sent with a big team to come search for her. And this Russian colonel is also blonde, but she's like maybe 50 or something. Female Russian colonel and a super badass. And her name is Colonel Zirkov. And all of the English speaking characters pronounce her name Zirkov.
Right.
All of the Russian speaking characters pronounce her name Zirkov.
Oh, sure.
And I'm just sitting there on my end of the couch giggling like a 12-year-old every time they go, Colonel Zirkov. And Allison just looks at me like, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, they're saying Zirkov.
Does Allison realize that they write this show for people like you?
Yes.
And that was a very deliberate play on words, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was my whole point, was that they're doing it on purpose. Yeah. And she thought I was an idiot for thinking that. Like, no, it's just a coincidence. Well,
you're an idiot, but for other reasons.
No, giggling was the appropriate response in that situation.
was it tee-hee? Giggling like tee-hee?
No, it was like...
Okay.
Like that. No, but I was...
Snortling?
Chortling.
Yeah. Chortling and snorting at the same time.
But I was thinking about it, though, and even the main character, Michael Weston, who speaks Russian fluently, was saying Zirkov, which was kind of the tell for me.
Yeah.
Like, they were saving it for just when the Russian speakers said it, so that it wasn't super obvious that they were saying Jerkov.
Okay.
Because he has a lot of lines.
Part of me kind of wonders how many outtakes there were filming that episode.
Of them just cracking up.
Of somebody saying Zirkov and Bruce Campbell going...
yeah.
In frame and on mic.
Whereas Allison did not wonder that at all. Didn't even cross her mind.
That's a very poignant different in your mentalities, the two of you.
Yeah, she's the intellectual. I'm the one that goes...
All right. Okay, I have... corrections from previous episodes.
Corrections. We got some stuff wrong.
Yeah.
Surely not.
I notice this stuff every so often. I mostly ignored it. Usually me.
This is like beyond the Osha Asha Lily Evangeline thing.
No, that was just me screwing up on the mic. This was me like not realizing I had screwed up until, days or weeks later.
Oh no.
But just to cover some things, a quick note on psychopathy. It was actually 30 points. So if you're playing the psychopathy game at home, 30 points is the cutoff for you could be a psychopath, not 20. 20, you can get,
So some people may have been playing at home got to the 20 and thought, crap.
Yeah. You could have a bad week and hit 20.
No wonder no one emailed us. They were all checking themselves into the loony bin.
Because it's the 60s. But another quick note on that, too, something I was remiss to mention is that there is another type of person that scores high. Like, remember how I said that the psychopathy checklist hitting that 30 points has been corrected indicates that you are a psychopath or may become one. It doesn't say that it doesn't mean you definitely are. There's another type of person that scores very high on that checklist. Do you know what type of person that is? It's a broad category. Very, very successful people.
Oh, type A. Kind of
superficial charm, grandiose sense of self-worth, lying, manipulative, no remorse.
There he goes with the French again.
Yeah. I said that on purpose. no remorse, lack of empathy, failure to accept responsibility. Those in particular, very, very, very successful people who have built themselves out of nothing.
Failure to accept responsibility also describes incredibly unsuccessful people as well.
Yes, but combined with some of those other things. Yeah. Well, I mean, a very, very, very successful person only has one thing that's may end up with just one thing that they don't have in common with a non-successful person, and that's their level of success. The non-successful person just picked the wrong thing to try to market or whatever, try to come up with, try to make themselves rich off
of. Or it may just be the timing or just the outcome.
Right. Cat from Hell wasn't in Creepshow 2. It was in Tales from the Dark Side, the movie.
Oh.
I was pretty sure I was saying that wrong when I said it, but I was like, I'll go with it. There was a Stephen King movie in there, a Stephen King story in there somewhere, as there were in all the Creepshow movies. But actually, Tales from the Dark Side is really good. So
I remember it as being really good.
It was one of the few that had a good wraparound story.
Yeah.
With the kid being held by the witch and he's telling her stories to delay her putting him in the oven.
Yeah.
And so he's telling her these stories out of the storybook that she gave him to keep him.
Was his name Hansel?
No. But the witch was Debbie Harry of Blondie.
Yeah. Okay. I definitely remember that now. Yeah. That was pretty good.
Remember a couple episodes ago when I said, when I was talking with Chris about sometimes you write a project for a game like D&D and it doesn't quite pan out and it ends up on the shelf and nothing ever comes off the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently things come off the shelf because something I wrote that was on the shelf just came off the shelf this past week.
Well, of course.
Yeah. 2 weeks after I said, nobody ever sees this stuff again.
You jinxed yourself, but in a good way.
Yeah. I had been paid for it and it was a column. It was a series of it that had proven to not be particularly popular. It was called the Tavern Profile series, where each one was like a description of a different tavern set in the D&D world. And, it gave you a layout of the place and talked about different people that hung around there and, hooks for stories and all that kind of stuff. I had written one that never went up on the website and it just did. So take that shelf. Shelf 4, Craig 1. Or maybe not 4, but the shelf still has more wins than I do.
You showed it who was boss this time.
Yeah, though. This time for that one 2,500 word little short article. So that's that. Do we have news or anything?
Well, we started talking about it just before we hit the record button.
Mm-hmm.
Was how we're not talking about Comic-Con.
Right.
Which was this week.
Yes.
Why are you two looking at me?
I don't know. Just we're, you know, three nerds and we're not talking about Comic-Con. We don't have anything to talk about. I volunteered my, you know, item where I had seen a picture of a Special Agent Dana Scully posing next to Chewbacca.
Sure.
She was about literally half his height, which was pretty awesome.
I get inundated with so much Comic-Con stuff if you just digging around the right websites every year that it's a lot of the same. Yeah. You know, it's every big TV show, every genre TV show, and sometimes not non-genre shows, and every big movie that's coming up in the next year has their big press junket and their show in Hall H and all that kind of stuff.
I mean, mostly, I have friends that have... that went to Comic-Con this year, in fact. But for me, like, not going, it's just kind of... I watch the news about, like, stuff I'm following very closely. Like, this year, it's The Legend of Korra, which I don't know if either of you have seen Avatar The Last Airbender.
Nope.
Really good animated series, but they did the first season of the follow-up a while back, and there's been this long wait for the second season. And it's getting ready to come out, so there's been a massive dump of information at Comic-Con this year. Amongst the news, which it might be something that introduces or that interests the Walking Dead fans in the room.
That would be all of us.
Yeah. Glenn will be voicing the very first. The Avatar is a character, you know, that reincarnates and, you know, don't know how long the cycle's been going on. You know, he's going to be voicing the very first incarnation of the Avatar. We don't know how, they haven't said how he's going to factor into the story yet. We just know he's going to be there and who's going to be voicing him.
Special guest star.
Hmm. Now, the Last Airbender, that was a movie, right?
Never speak of the movie.
Wasn't that one of M. Night Shyamalama Ding Dong's long string of... abject failures.
That's a comedy clam, Mike. Find a new joke.
No.
What, people have been saying M. Night Shyamalama Ding Dong since his second movie.
I've never heard anyone else refer to him as
Lord.
That.
Good Lord. Go online,
please. That one goes back a long time.
Go online and type in M. Night Sham, and it will
is
not
the
give,
first thing that comes
it will be 10,000 hits of Shyamalama Ding Dong of people calling him that on websites and on forums. Absolutely.
The one thing I will give his movie version of the series is it was...
I had to type S-H-A before Shyamalama Ding Dong.
As I did go to see it out of morbid curiosity and, hey, $5 matinees, why not? But I was sitting behind this, like, 8-year-old who had gone with his mom, and I just had this smile on my face as the whole time the kid was sitting there. It's like, no, Mom, they got this and that wrong, like, the whole time. And I was just, yeah, kid, that's right. So they got it so very wrong.
But when it comes to Comic-Con, I don't wet myself over everything that's going on at Comic-Con, you know. At the end of it all, there'll be something on one of the news sites that I frequent that'll be like, oh, that's interesting. And then the rest of it'll all just be more stuff that happened at Comic-Con.
Well, the only reason I paid attention to it at all was the X-Files 20th anniversary panel. Because Mulder and Scully were both there with all of the, with, you know, Chris Carter and all of the writers and directors and even Vince Gilligan.
Oh.
Who said that without the X-Files, there would be no Breaking Bad.
Right, because he wrote the episode that Bryan Cranston was in.
Yep.
And that's where he got introduced to Bryan Cranston as a dramatic actor.
Yep.
So thank you, Chris Carter, for giving us two excellent television shows, only one of them made by you.
Yes.
I don't know that Millennium was all that very good.
I really liked the first two seasons of Millennium. The last season took a really weird swerve.
It was a victim of Fox.
Yeah.
Hey, here's a show that's got this cult following, and we're gonna stuff it down your throats at Friday night. And
The Friday night death slot.
I once did a study of that over the course of like 10 years. How many different shows Fox relegated? To the Friday night death slot.
Yeah.
And killed it within like a year to a year and a half. There's a lot, if I remember correctly, from when I went through the list. I mean, I literally went through every Fox show for 10 years, and there's like a dozen. Different shows that get like, oh, we're gonna move it over here, and oh, look, next year it's gone.
And it's gone.
Yeah. Josh, you're our resident video game nut.
Yes.
And now there's a whole bunch of stuff to talk about, you know, a few weeks late.
Well, yeah.
We've been waiting for you to come back as far as console games.
Yeah. Oh, well, you kind of touched on some of the issues Microsoft has had out of the gate.
Microsoft beatings will continue throughout the episode. Microsoft fans, you have been warned.
Yeah. And I will preface this by saying I owned all three consoles from this generation, and my 360 got far and away the most use, but I cannot deny Microsoft's flubbed it, stumbled badly coming out of the gate. It wasn't even the thing you talked about with like the online check-in.
They screwed up other stuff. I just touched on a couple. What else?
The big thing with that is they were adding digital rights management to the discs. Mm-hmm. It was, as you know, video games are no different than movies and music in that everything's heading towards all digital distribution. Microsoft was kind of...
Because everybody in the world has an internet connection.
Well, that was part of what caused the backlash.
Except for all the people who don't. Go ahead.
That was kind of part of the backlash. Microsoft was basically DRMing the discs, and the disc wasn't what mattered. You were basically got a digital license with the disc that paired with your account, so you couldn't just turn around and sell that disc like you've always been able to do with console games. You would have to go through authorized resellers, which, you know, in the U.S., that means GameStop. So, and Sony ended up having a field day with that. Like, Sony made a video during E3.
I love that video. We have to link to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But go ahead and describe it.
It's, you know, this guy standing there. It's like, here's how you share games on the PlayStation 4. Like, turns, hands the guy a disc, and they both turn and mug for the camera. Nice. And it's got...
Yeah, it's like 15 seconds long.
Yeah, and it's gotten like several million hits or something absurd like that. But Sony, the funny thing about Sony is they haven't really done anything that impressive, but by, you know, they're not taking risks when Microsoft was getting this backlash. It's like, no, for us, it's going to be the same as last generation on all those points. And it's people ate it up. So Sony's looking really good right now. Nintendo, their hardware's already out, the Wii U.
Whenever somebody says that, it sounds like they're saying the Wii U.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate name. Like, the name's been... Apparently, Nintendo hasn't really done their job advertising. Like, people who don't follow, like, video game-specific media very closely, for a long time, there were a lot of people that thought it was just, like, an add-on controller for the Wii. They didn't realize it was a whole separate console, which that created a lot of early confusion. And just in general, they haven't really been advertising it outside of like video game media. So a lot of people aren't really up to date what games they are. They don't really know anything about it. And the funny thing is Ubisoft is like the one third party publisher. Like, they've always been supportive of Nintendo hardware. They'll put out like really good exclusives long after everyone else has bailed on Nintendo. They've already come out and said it's like Zombie U, which was an exclusive they had put out for it, a survival horror game. They were saying, which I believe it's one of, if not the best-selling third-party games on the system. They were like, yeah, we didn't turn a profit on this. And for them to publicly say that, kind of a big deal, kind of a weird change in the relationship between them and Nintendo. And they had another exclusive in the pipe a week before it was set to release. They're like, nope, it's going multi-platform and releasing all the versions together. So it's for the Wii U version got delayed by like 4 to 6 months as a result. I think it's coming out in like a few weeks. And Nintendo went to all this trouble to buy like exclusives. Platinum Games, who I talked about last time, they bought two exclusives from them, Wonderful 101 and the sequel to Bayonetta, the one with the Hair Witch I talked about.
Ooh, Hair Witch.
But
more you, Hair Witch.
Yeah, they bought these as exclusives.
Sexy.
They bought them as exclusives. And
if that's what you're into. Sorry.
But they're not talking about them. Like, they'll put little trailers in their presentations, but they're not talking about these third-party exclusives. They're kind of focusing on their own stuff that they're developing, the next Smash Brothers, the next Zelda, the next Mario. And so these all these third-party games are kind of falling to the wayside, and you know, nothing selling for the system other than, as usual, Nintendo stuff, which even they don't have much out right now. They have like a retro Mario title, and then kind of, you know, you had Wii Sports with the Wii. You've got kind of their version of that for the Wii U that shows off everything the controller can do. But that's a pack-in for one of the console packages, so its sales don't really mean much. So Nintendo's not doing great. Microsoft's stumbling, but there's
that's an understatement.
They're still selling out the pre-orders, though, but the pre-order supply is so restricted, you can't really tell much until a few months out.
Well, there's always going to be the diehards.
Yeah.
And who are going to... I mean, because there's plenty of people out there who play Xbox who... All that stuff that everybody kind of criticized Microsoft for, they don't care. They're like, yeah, I've got the high-speed internet connection. I don't care if that's how I have to sell games. They just want the Xbox games.
And even the people who do care, you know, when the next Halo comes out or the next Call of Battlefield, Modern Ops, whatever comes out, people still get the system to play those games. It's going to do okay. And... all this happened far enough ahead of the release. You know, as long as they don't do anything else, like, spectacularly dumb, and they, you know, obviously that could still happen, but as long as they avoid any further mistakes, they'll recover. And they just did a massive restructuring of their console division, like, the guy who had messed it up so badly.
I was going to say, somebody was like... Yeah.
Yeah, Don Matrick, who...
You're going to have to go now.
Well, that was the thing. The reason he's gone is he got a job with Zynga, their new CEO. He's their new CEO now, trying to right that sinking ship.
Zynga? Mike's looking confused.
Does a lot of, like, the Farmville and a lot of those Facebook games.
That have come and gone and nobody cares about anymore.
Yeah, and that's the thing.
I never cared about when they were around.
Except for your mom who just got on Facebook.
Yeah.
I'm playing the farm game.
Oh, and they were doing big for
a
while.
That was popular 5 years ago.
Oh, they were doing well for a while, but now their fortunes are sinking.
Is it possible that Farmville annoyed more people than it entertained?
Hey, it did well enough to get a Farmville too.
Yeah. It was the new shiny.
The new shiny?
Yeah.
And now that shines...
What was it? The Mafia Wars? Was that one of
Mafia
them?
Mafia Wars. I was just about to mention that, too.
Some kind of poker.
Yeah. And that, you know, I used to see...
It was those three.
Sticking requests for those games from my friends and my Facebook people all the time. And I'd be just like, just stop. I'm never going to play a game on Facebook. I have a hard enough time finding time to play my Xbox.
Well... Don't get mad at me, but I'm almost willing to have all those games come back and all those requests come back if Facebook would just fix the damn app. Just make it work.
Okay.
Like, I can't even... It's sorry, but it's just... It's
which app
painful.
Are you talking about?
The Facebook app.
Okay.
Like,
I'm presuming the Facebook app for iPhone.
Yeah. The mobile app just does not work.
Yeah, the Android one has some issues as well.
It's painful to try. I just want to see what's up.
But that's Facebook's fault, not Apple's fault.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, that's absolutely Facebook's fault.
Because I know what's coming later, so I'm just checking where.
Well, no, that's whether or not
there's any Apple problems.
Well, that's why
Facebook can't get their crap together. Oh, surprise! So we're ripping on Microsoft and Facebook today.
If you want to sponsor the podcast
and Zynga, because that's a sinking ship apparently.
That there, and it's one of those things. You've always got this like never-ending stream of Facebook games. Some hit it big, some don't, but they all fade eventually. And Zynga is apparently lost whatever mojo they had with some of those early hits.
Yeah, I've never played any of them.
No,
never cared to, never wanted to. Got peeved when people would send me requests, and then it's like, go back to sending me pictures of your breakfast. I'd rather have that than a request. I only do that if there's bacon involved, to take care of a Black Angus cow.
I only do that if there's bacon involved
or cat pictures, as I post periodically.
Yeah, you're one of those.
What was Farmville? Was that like Sim Farm?
Yeah, basically? More or less. Yeah. Okay.
I never even looked at it.
And you could send stuff to other people and get stuff from, you know. Yeah.
And it's
the impression I got was because you'd get requests for people to either send you stuff or they would want to give you something. Like in their game, they have another one of this animal, but they can't take care of it because they haven't built their farm big enough or whatever. Whatever, you know. And so they're trying to give it to you. It's like it's the Yamaguchi. Was it Tamagotchi? What was the electronic pet from the
Tamagotchi,
mid-90s?
Tamagotchi, right.
Where you walked around with a little beep, boop, beep, boop, boop, yeah. Beep. I'm miming holding a little little electronic device in my hand. And you had to, you know...
Check it out on the Super Pass.
You had to play with it, and you had to press the other button to feed it, and you had to keep your little electronic pet alive. Yeah. Uh-huh. You remember those things?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's that on Facebook.
Okay.
Well, but with a whole crap load, and you can give them to other people.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's as if I came over here in 1995 and said, hey, Mike, you're my friend, and went... and dropped like 16 of these electronic devices and then walked out your door and slammed it.
Yeah. The way those games are designed, it's like you either try to get as many of your friends playing as possible or you spend real world bucks on it. That's the entire like business strategy of these things.
And it's perfect because it gives Facebook the two things that they want. It gets advertising or money to yeah. go into Facebook, or it gets you to get more people on Facebook and more active on Facebook, and therefore more likely to spend more money.
Exactly.
And to get more friends and whatever. It's all Satan's plan, I tell you. It's the devil. The devil's doing this. His name is Mark Zuckerman.
B.L. Zuckerman? Bob?
The Prince of Mark Zuckerman, the old Scratch principle. I'm just trying to find other names for Satan that we can turn into Zuckerman. I can't think of any. Beelzebub, Prince of Lies.
The Prince of Markness.
Old Scratch.
Zuckerfer.
Zuckerfer.
Prince of Markness.
Ah, there you go. The Prince of Markness episode title.
Writing it down.
Oh. And, yeah. No, thank you to all those games.
This was supposed to be a Microsoft bashing episode. What happened?
Oh, it's coming. It's probably still coming, right?
Poor Facebook.
Whatever. Those people are billionaires.
Anyway, so back to video games.
Oh, I don't know, but it's, like I said, Sony, you know, Microsoft stumbled. Sony's been playing it safe, but compared to Microsoft, they look fantastic, you know, just by virtue of playing it safe and, you know, not doing anything spectacularly dumb. Has, you know, anyone who was paying attention when the PlayStation 3 was coming out, they messed it up badly. And as they were putting out the console with Blu-ray that cost $600 at launch, that, you know, had almost no games available for it when it came out, it was, they recovered, obviously, but the Sony had a rough going. It looks like Microsoft's in kind of that same position.
So what are you planning on buying? Sucker.
I actually already have a Wii U, but mostly for like a lot of the downloadable games. Like I own Zombie U. That's the only disc I own. And I probably will end up getting a PlayStation 4 at some point. I'm not getting all the consoles again. I barely have time for the, you know, what I have now.
You watch too much anime to be playing so many video games.
Yeah, pretty much.
And now you're... without getting into any specifics, you are getting a roommate who is also a huge anime fan.
So, yes.
Very, good luck ever playing any video games.
Well, fortunately...
That's like me. I married somebody who doesn't like to play video games. Therefore, I don't play video games.
Well, yes, but you also married somebody who had never watched a zombie movie before. And then you invited me over.
Yeah.
And now Allison watches lots of zombie movies.
Well, she watches lots of zombie TV.
Yes. Well, she's watched a good number of movies now, too, because of me. She said she's had her first zombie like nightmares. She's actually had bad dreams. So that's what I've brought to your wife.
No. She's
zombie nightmares.
I'm pretty sure she's having like apocalypse dreams in general. It wasn't zombie specific, but that could be due to any number of things we're watching.
Yeah. But at least part of it is the fact that I got her.
Yeah.
Like, Craig, come over. Let's watch a movie. What do you want to watch? Oh, here's a zombie movie that I'd like to watch again. Yeah. So you guys can watch it the first time.
One thing I kind of remembered going back to Microsoft. But
that's okay. It's a good transition.
Yeah. Well, no, it was Conan O'Brien started this bit on his show called Clueless Gamer. He knows nothing about games and all.
That's
so
funny.
So, of course, he made videos of him reviewing games with, you know, the guy in charge of a lot of his social media stuff, Aaron Blair, would be like sitting by him, helping him out with stuff. But he did a video where he went to E3 and, of course, was talking to Sony reps, was talking to Microsoft reps. And there was this moment he talked to the Sony reps first and he ended that conversation with, I talked to you first. So the PlayStation 4 is going to be the best thing. then he moved on to Microsoft, and this was at E3. Microsoft had already been taking like a month of bad press because of how the reveal had went and all this, all these rumors and speculations about the DRM stuff that hadn't been announced yet. But he when he was done with the Microsoft guy, it's like, okay, since I talked to you second, I'm going to say the Xbox One is going to be the best thing this next generation. And the rep's reaction, he just, like, most people would roll with it, maybe have a laugh out of it. No, this rep just looked crestfallen. This was after a month of bad press, and it's just, I guess he took it in light of all that. It's like,
like, hey, Microsoft rep, you realize you're talking to a late night
comedian
talk show host who has built most of his career on kind of being a little snarky and ironic, and
one who has expressly said he knows nothing about video games in a bit on his show.
Now tell me this: somebody has suggested that if he's going to start playing that Conan O'Brien, if he's going to start playing video games, he needs to play a Conan video game, right?
They there's the DC fighting game Injustice Gods Among Us. He did an episode of it, like, way back towards the beginning of the I can't remember if it was the beginning of the TBS show or, you know, the beginning of his short, you know, Tonight Show run. But he got with Paul Dini, who did, like, the really good Batman and Superman series in the 90s. And, you know, designed a superhero with him that they ended up calling the Flaming Sea. And it's it's basically Conan in a hockey jersey like ski goggles with like.
Have they put something online? Have they done like a cartoon version of this or something?
They've done
a piece of artwork or whatever.
They've done clips. I've
seen all sorts of.
They've done.
For some reason, I'm thinking I've seen that.
If you've seen Conan with like a Hyalai glove and an oven mitt, that's the Flaming Sea. But there's been a lot of fan art of it. DC, like when they were doing the Young Justice cartoon, they would do bits where it would be a scene from the show that has Superman in it, and they would replace Superman with Conan's character. And for the Injustice segment on Clueless Gamer, they did this bit where I don't know how they did this, but they basically reskinned Superman as the Flaming Sea. So there's a fight where it's like the Flaming Sea versus, I think, Aquaman.
Oh, of course. Because it's not funny enough to have Conan O'Brien fight somebody from the DC universe, but it's got to be Aquaman.
Yeah.
So is that all you got for games?
Yeah, I think so.
Pretty much.
All right, here we go.
Yeah.
Strap in tight, Microsoft lovers.
Well,
Apple guy speaks.
You know, I'm not really an Apple guy. I'm a Mac guy.
Okay.
And there's
distinction. You've got an iPhone and an iPod. You had an iPod for, you had the big brick like iPod.
I had the very first
for
iPod.
For the longest time.
No, I appreciate the technology,
right,
and what, you know, portable digital music players allow me to do.
Here's the thing.
How they enhance my life. I like my iPhone, you know, but at heart, I'm a Mac guy. I'm not an Apple guy.
I know, but to be fair, what it comes down to is I like to play devil's advocate with you and just poke at you every so often. Yeah. And mostly it's because I don't actually have any other friends that are like diehard about a particular piece of technology.
No.
You're the guy of my close friends that has that, you know, really very, very strong allegiance to a particular product.
Or a series of products, whatever.
Right. So, anyway, that said, go ahead. What do you got? Hit me.
Yeah, okay. So, from a biased source.
But it's news. I mean, you didn't make this up.
I did not.
It's actual just, news.
Windows has not been having a good week or month or year.
Yeah.
It started with Windows 8, and it seems to have gone steadily downhill. But it's just, there have been a couple of things over the last week. So I decided to compile them together.
Here we go.
Now, okay, so Windows 8 not being, adopted all that fast. Not quite to the point of Vista Part 2, where, you know, you can't just go to any retailer and, you know, see the sign for the free downgrade or upgrade, as it is, to Windows 7.
Or the downgrade to XP as I got when I got my laptop years ago.
But it's heading that way, and Microsoft's trying to steer that ship around, getting ready to release 8.1, codenamed Blue, which is going to supposedly fix a lot of these problems, like the absence of the start button, which people just cannot get over. Now, Josh, you have Windows 8.
Yes, I do. I have two machines at home. One's a Windows 7, one's a Windows 8.
Yeah.
Do they fight?
No, they get along pretty well, actually.
And you've figured out Windows 8, and you've gotten it working for you at home. And it's fine for you.
Yeah, I mean, my favorite part of it is, what a lot of people don't realize is, like, Microsoft's actually managed to, like, drop the resource load, like, over the last few OSs, and like on my laptop, Windows 8 runs far better than 7 did.
Yeah.
And so that alone has kind of, there are aspects of it, of the interface I don't like.
Exactly.
Like the way they handle the menus and all. But I like the performance I'm getting out of it enough that I can overlook those things.
Yeah, the way, the way it's written, the way it works in the background, like you said, the performance.
Yeah.
The security, especially,
all that
stuff's been improved, but no one's really noticed it because they just can't get over this interface. Yeah.
Well, see,
because as Emily once said, the internet likes to successfully hate things, and talking about how good something is doesn't happen as much as talking about hating.
Well, and for me, like, the resource thing ends up being a huge deal because I had got this laptop to do, some light video editing on. And when you're video editing, you need every bit of resource you can get. So freeing some of that up from the OS has been wonderful.
Okay, but, so there you go. Good job, Microsoft.
Yeah.
Moving on.
The one good thing you'll hear about Microsoft today.
Mm-hmm. But as far as Windows and the enterprise, nobody wants to use 8. People are just like, they won't buy computers from vendors if they can't get 7 on them. I mean, it's that bad. And we've got that at my office right now.
That's the backlash thing. It's not surprising at this point.
We're finally ready to. In fact, we have to upgrade from XP because silly Autodesk and their 2014 products are not. They don't support XP. So we have to have Windows 7 or higher. Or is it Vista or higher? I'm not even sure. But we wouldn't touch Vista with a 10-foot pole. So. Yeah, so we have to upgrade to Windows 7, and I mean, everybody we've talked to has said, just get Windows 7, don't get Windows 8, don't even go there.
you tell me I drop the ball on the sound effects quite a bit, so I figured for your segment here, I'm going to jump in, so go ahead, keep talking.
Okay. No, good. So there's that, there's the Windows 8.1 preview is out. Uh-oh.
Keep going.
What just happened?
Well, the lights just dimmed a lot. I believe that is a brownout that we just experienced.
Okay, you can cut this. We're going to stop reacting to everything that happens in the room.
Well, we have to react to that because, not all of this is on battery. So if something goes out, the recording stops. Let me consult the radar. Pop-up thunderstorms. Okay, I'm done. Thank you, Matthew. All right.
Back to Microsoft.
Okay. So, speaking of Microsoft's problems this week.
Okay.
Microsoft sinks 11% on earnings miss and huge Surface write-down. This is from CNN Money, Adrian Covert. Microsoft took a big write-down on its highly touted but poorly adopted Surface tablet last quarter, causing the company to badly miss Wall Street analysts' profit expectations. Shares of Microsoft fell 11% on Friday. Results were negatively impacted by a whopping $900 million write-off of Microsoft Surface RT inventory. You got to be a little bit quicker with that if you're going to do it.
You got to put pauses in your talking.
Microsoft.
Okay.
Recently,
not in every word,
knocked $150 off the price of the tablet, which debuted in October and initially sold for $500. It is the first PC designed by Microsoft, but the company says its own devices will become a big part of the company's strategy going forward. Yay, everything's great at Microsoft. That's what they say. Following the sweeping reorganization of the company earlier in July, which no longer divides Microsoft's business units according to specific products, the challenge for the company's management will be to strengthen that device's side of its operations. With the Surface failing to catch on, software chief Terry Meyerson must figure out where the Windows RT platform, a variant of Windows 8 designed for tablets, fits into Microsoft's future strategy. In addition to the shortcomings of the Surface RT, few hardware partners supported the platform when it was introduced last year. Lenovo, Samsung, and others have since stopped producing RT devices.
I know somebody who just this past week was lamenting having bought a Surface.
Oh.
Yeah.
Someone I know?
No. Nobody you know. But they were like, yeah, that was a mistake.
Yeah. Microsoft hasn't helped its cause by failing to properly explain what differentiates Windows RT from Windows 8. As a result, hardware makers have largely settled on Intel-based hybrid devices that are neither great tablets nor great PCs, which hurts Microsoft's Windows strategy. Acer, for example, recently released the first 8-inch Windows tablet, for which I have a review.
Oh, good.
This comes Peter Bright at Ars Technica.
How exciting.
Review. First 8-inch Windows tablet is a device that shouldn't exist.
Jeez.
Yeah, this is not a good review.
This is not a review. This is spewing vitriol, but go ahead.
I didn't bother to go back and see if this guy is, you know.
Most people, for the record, everybody listening on the internet, most people don't actually review things anymore. They just find clever ways to put things down.
Yeah, you might change your mind after you hear this.
Well, here's the thing, though. I mean, do they just give you the facts and tell you that something doesn't perform up to snuff? Or do they find ways to say, what was the first line?
A device that shouldn't exist.
Yes. See, that's trying to be clever and trying to put something down and make like it's a soundbite.
Okay.
It's, you know, it's
sure.
The headline is
going to be sensationalistic. They all are.
Oh, it's going to be peppered throughout the article too, probably. But let's listen. I'm just making a prediction. Maybe I'm wrong.
Okay. Well, I'm just going to kind of skip around in this thing because it's four pages printed out at 10-point font. So. Blah, 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 blah. Microsoft designed Windows 8 for screens of 10 inches or more, and initially the operating system's hardware requirements had a similar constraint. That decision looked a little short-sighted after the success of tablets such as Google's Nexus 7 and the iPad Mini. Accordingly, Microsoft changed the rules in March, opening the door to a range of smaller Windows tablets. The Acer Iconia W3 is the first, and currently the only, 8-inch Windows tablet. That attribute alone makes it, in some sense, noteworthy. Sadly, it's about the only thing that does.
Yeah, see, there you go. Yeah.
Well, no, but he backs this up.
That's fine, but he didn't have to say that line. I'm not saying that the Microsoft products are good. I'm saying that this guy is being kind of a dick with the review.
This is how articles are written on the internet. Read the internet?
I know, all the time. But the point is that you called it a review. It's not a review. It's vitriol. It's a way for somebody to write something and feel clever.
Well, with negative reviews, like...
As are all reviews written on the internet.
Nowadays,
well,
yeah.
Well, no, the thing is, with negative reviews, most people just see, like, bad score and stop right there. Whereas, you know, the people who run the site want you to see all the words, so you kind of have to pepper stuff
but
like
even,
that to get
even,
people to read
even
it.
Read movie reviews compared to movie reviews of 20 years ago. You know, if the critic doesn't like the movie, they will find some really clever and often mean way to put it down. And they'll come do everything short of actually talking about the director's mother. At least some reviewers will. But anyway, that's a whole topic for some other time.
Okay.
What else about the
I shouldn't read the heading to this paragraph. 8 inches of horror.
That's what she said.
Screens are important. We spend essentially all our time interacting with devices looking at screens. Cost cutting on screens is unforgivable, as a bad screen will damage every single interaction you have with the device. This goes doubly so for tablets, where the screen works not only as an output device, but also as the primary input device. The Acer Iconia W3 screen is a standout, because it is worst in class. I hated every moment I used the Iconia W3, and I hated it because I hated the screen. Its color accuracy and viewing angles are both miserable. Whites aren't white. They're weirdly colorful and speckled. The screen has a peculiar grainy appearance that makes it look permanently greasy. You can polish as much as you like. It will never go away. The whole effect is reminiscent in some ways of old resistive screens. It's hard to overstate just how poor this screen is. At any reasonable tablet viewing distance, the color of the screen is uneven. The viewing angle is so narrow that at typical handheld distances, the colors change across the width of the screen. At full arm's length, the screen does finally look even, but the device is obviously unusable that way.
Jeez.
Acer is clearly...
Except for really old people who have to hold the books really far away from their faces to read. Maybe that's who they should remarket. They should re-strategize their marketing toward senior citizens. Like, you know, if you hold a book like this, way far away, like this... well, our tablet's perfect for you.
Yeah, but then they're going to have to package it with some kind of remote. So well, they'll also, you don't actually have to touch the screen.
They'll also have to make the tablet like a 21-inch tablet so that it can have like the the jitterbug type buttons on it.
Icons.
The icons are the size of your head.
Yeah. All right.
I love my 21-inch tablet.
Acer has clearly skimped on the screen. I'm sure the panel in the W3 was quite cheap, and that may be somewhat reflected in the unit's retail price. $379 for a 32-gigabyte unit, $429 for this 64-gigabyte one. Okay, I gotta jump back to the specs now on this. He constantly goes back and compares it to the iPad mini because of the price.
Right.
The 32-gigabyte iPad mini is $429. This 64-gigabyte Acer is also $429. They have about the same screen size. Now, you would think, well, how can you compare something that has twice the storage space, you know, the 64-gigabyte to 32-gigabyte iPad mini?
Sure.
Well, where is it?
What clever way does he have of comparing those?
No, it's not him.
Oh, okay.
Here. The, 64 gigs of flash storage, with which Acer's default partitioning leaves a little over 29 gigabytes usable.
Oh.
So this thing comes with operating system and pre-installed programs and, of course, bloatware, because you know there's a ton of bloatware on this thing.
Oh, man.
35 gigs of crap on this. So you only you have less than half usable. Whereas with... There you go. The iPad... Jackass. The iPad mini has about the same amount usable with half the total storage.
Sure.
So anyway, blah, blah, blah. iPad mini, which has a comparable amount of disk space. It doesn't matter how cheap something is if you don't want to use it at all. This poor screen quality isn't a question of resolution either. The resolution is 1280 by 800, and it's not. He says, not tremendously high resolution, but text looks crisp enough. At 186 pixels per inch, 1280 by 800 feels more or less okay for this size of device. The low resolution does, however, have one significant drawback. It disables Windows 8's side-by-side Metro multitasking, which requires a resolution of at least 1366 by 768. The W3 screen is 86 pixels too narrow, so the Metro environment is strictly one application at a time. This guy really likes the side-by-side multitasking, so kind of goes on and on about that. As for the bundling of Office, which comes with the tablet, full Office, by the way.
Oh.
Full Word, full Excel.
Okay.
On a screen that's too small to use it.
Mm-hmm. Except for the old people.
Yeah. He says he's not sure if it's really necessary because of the resolution of 1280 by 800 so low and the screen is so small. Traditional desktop Windows applications just aren't much fun on the device. The system comes configured by default to use 125% scaling, giving it an effective resolution of 1024 by 640.
This welcome means that, to 1996.
Well, he talks about that. This means that applications like Word and Excel are tremendously cramped, even more so when you use their largely ineffective touch mode that makes some screen elements even larger. So basically, you've ended up with, you know, four big buttons on the screen. Like, what was that thing?
Simon? The game Simon? Can you play Simon on it?
No,
at arm's length?
The thing you were talking about.
Oh, the jitterbug?
The jitterbug.
The phone with the great big buttons?
Skipping ahead to the conclusion here, he calls it a machine without a purpose.
So nice.
In practice, I don't get it. The Windows desktop offers no meaningful value in this form factor. The last time I used a device with an effective resolution as low as 1024 by 640, Windows NT4 had just been released.
What year was that?
He doesn't say, but what did you say?
96.
Well, that would have been Windows 95. Yeah. So that's even before that.
Okay.
And then there's the size. If I'm using the W3 with its dock at a typical laptop distance, everything is just too small. I don't see why anyone would want to buy this tablet. The screen is so bad that I can't recommend the device to anyone. Even if you truly must have an 8-inch Windows tablet, for some reason, you shouldn't buy the W3. You should just wait and hope that something better comes along. And he breaks it down into the good, the bad, and the ugly. The good, if you want Windows 8 on an 8-inch tablet, you have no alternative.
Oh!
The bad. The desktop is not good on an 8-inch tablet, and the Metro ecosystem, while improving, still isn't there yet. The ugly. The screen is just the worst. The worst. So there you go.
And I was about to say, the way he was describing it, I could picture those like really old bad screens like he was talking about.
Shall we have a counterpoint?
Sure.
Dateline, Singapore. Apple Incorporated is investigating an accident in which a Chinese woman was killed by an electric shock when answering a call on her iPhone 5 while it was charging, the U.S. technology company said on Monday. Last Thursday, Ma Ailun, a 23-year-old woman from China's western, from a western China region, I'm not even going to try to read that, and a flight attendant with China Southern Airlines, was electrocuted when she took a call on the charging mobile telephone, the official news agency quoted police as saying on Sunday. And then it goes on to have apologies from Microsoft or from Apple and so forth. But here's the thing. I think what the iPhone was probably trying to do was supercharge her. It was trying to make her a better person.
You think?
Well, right? I mean, an iPhone wouldn't try to kill you, would it, Mike?
No.
So clearly it was must have been trying to juice her up.
Now, what I
unfortunately
what I've read since the initial since the initial reports of this is that she was using some cheap knockoff third party charger.
Sure, I mean this is just one little article.
Also, here. It's China, so their electrical system is probably
it's not great,
not up to snuff as far as we're concerned.
Probably not. Okay, so
and as I told you before we recorded, the new MacBook Air has had a Wi-Fi issue, which caused the Wi-Fi speeds to not be quite as blazingly fast as they were supposed to, and Apple has subsequently fixed that with a software update. So if you want to talk about mistakes that Apple makes, there you go.
Yes! Alrighty. So.
Not like putting...
Sorry, Microsoft. Get your act together.
Not like putting a...
Pudding?
Pudding.
Pudding.
Putting.
So is that a segue to something? Or?
Maybe.
Shall I enunciate better?
No, that's me.
Putting substandard screens with resolutions from 1992.
Oh, geez.
Shall we just guess in your tablet from 2013? But anyway.
Wow.
Okay, so there you go. Windows. Or not Windows. Microsoft.
As I said, get your act together.
Yeah.
Starting to look like you're worse than Apple.
Ooh, hey. No, Android. Google. Worse than Google.
Anyway, let's move on to something else a little lighter.
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Something
no.
where we don't you're, rip on...
No. They're starting to look worse than BlackBerry.
Mm.
Ooh, ouch. No, sorry, you're not.
I was That's about to say, they're a long way from that level.
Wow.
I'm sorry, Microsoft, that was low.
TV.
Ooh, we like TV.
Series finales. We've talked, kind of hit on like Lost and Newhart and... What was it? Saying elsewhere.
Series, not seasons.
Series, not seasons. Series.
Because
finales.
In the UK,
very, very last. Right.
Series
right.
means season.
Welcome to America. Series is the entire run of the show, not one season.
I would just like to point that out
right.
for our
for
many,
our,
many, many
for our two
listeners
UK
in
listeners
in the UK.
There's two of them.
Are there?
Yeah, sure. Why not? Anyway, TV series finales that actually ended well. What do you think? Throw one out there.
That we haven't talked about already?
Yeah. Battlestar?
Well, we talked about that, though.
Briefly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a show that... Well, we talked about the fact that they had a finale. We didn't really get into...
No, we talked about how them sending all their technology into the sun didn't really make any sense.
Right, that was the one weak point in the episode. I think Starbuck just... Okay, well, let's... one of these. There's going to be spoilers for TV shows.
Spoilers.
Yeah.
Spoilers.
Starbuck up and disappearing. Josh, have you watched Battlestar?
It's been a while, okay. But yeah, I have seen it all the way through.
Right, because she
wasn't real.
She was dead. She was an angel.
Yeah.
One thing that I find, what I do enjoy having rewatched some episodes lately is that on a number of occasions, Baltar asks Head Six, you know, the version of Six that he's seeing in his head all the time. What are you? Because he's trying to figure out if he's a Cylon or if he's got a chip in his head or whatnot. And every time he asks her that, she says, I'm an angel sent to you by God. And she's right. She never lies to him.
Wow.
From this early in the second season, I believe.
I had
was.
Forgotten about that, but yeah, you're
it
right.
It comes up very early in the show. She identifies herself as an angel. And, you know, for whatever else you might want to call those apparitions, whatever they were that some people could see and others couldn't, they were effectively angels. They were guiding people to something. But one thing that struck me, too, having rewatched the Battlestar Galactica stuff, is how broken Tyrell is by the end of the show.
Yeah.
He's the everyman throughout the show, discovers he's a Cylon, and then finds out that Tori killed Callie, chokes her to death, in, you know, sparking the whole shootout in the CIC. And then at, by the end of the, when they get down to the planet and everybody's having their little last moments and everything, he just sits there. He doesn't have a single line. He's a broken man.
Yeah.
He walks off by himself. That's it. And I was, he was my favorite character. So I was like, I was
broken always, Cylon.
Yeah. Sopranos. Did you see the Sopranos? Everybody knows about the ending of the Sopranos.
I'm aware of the ending, yeah.
How do you interpret the ending? We've talked about this off.
We did talk. We talked about it off the air?
I think it was off the air, yeah. Yeah, you and I did, because we talked about when...
I know we talked about it. When, I can't remember when, whether it was
when
on
James
the air
Gandolfini
or off the air.
Died, I made a really poor taste joke.
And what was that joke,
Craig? Now we can bring it up on the episode, because it's been a few weeks. It's not too soon. When James Gandolfini died, did everything cut to black and the music cut off?
For him? Yeah.
Because
quite suddenly, apparently,
yeah, everybody went and had a shit fit over.
He got a piece of Polish sausage lodged in the lining of his heart.
No, how the show just stopped, how everything went to black.
Yeah,
and, well,
yeah. You told me what your theory on that
my
was.
My theory on that is that he got shot.
That's the moment. That
that's
bullet,
the moment he
went
died.
In the back of his head.
Yep. One of those people in that bar or in that restaurant put a bullet in his head, because they point out to you very clearly at one point. There's two characters are talking about how it happens. And one person said, I don't remember who it was that said it. It's been so long since I watched it. But they said, you're just 1 minute, you're walking along, everything's fine. The next minute, you're done.
Yeah.
You never see it coming.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a good, I think, you know, it was at least a real ending, yeah, whether you liked it or not.
No, I liked it. I liked that it was ambiguous, too.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't bother me at all. I'm not one of those people that needs to see something happen.
Everything. Yeah. Got to see him get shot and then see Carmella screaming and...
Right. Blood spattered all over AJ.
AJ pissing himself and running away for the first time in 8 episodes.
Because he was such a turd season.
The last time he ran during that final season was when he decided he was going to get his act together and go out for sports at some college. He was going to do something physical, and he started running down this road. Tony sees him, pulls up next to him and says, hey, AJ, want to ride back to the house? And he immediately stops running and gets back in the car. Like his, I'm going to go out and run and be healthy, lasted a half a mile because he's such a turd. Any other shows you can think that ended well?
The problem is, like, for me, like, it's always the bad endings that stick out in my mind.
Okay, so what's a bad one? What do you have one that you were like, oh, man, really?
Well, like... I'm trying to think of specific examples. Like, the one thing that in general always gets me is when they end a series and they, you know, leaving open plot threads is fine, but raising new questions at like the very end, that's just the part that gets me.
That's, yeah, I'm not wild about that. And I don't know why people, you know, just the producer's messing with you. It's I can throw a couple more questions at you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, it's ambiguous. We're being edgy here.
No, you're being a dick.
Yeah, pretty much.
Wrap it up so I can move on.
Yeah.
Oz. I'm guessing neither one of you guys ever watched Oz?
I've seen a lot of Oz. I didn't see the last season, though.
I won't get into specifics, but the beauty of Oz was that everybody who was there, was in that prison, was guilty. They never took you on the trip of like, well, here's the guy who was falsely imprisoned.
Yeah.
No, even the ostensibly good people, the Tobias Beecher, who's kind of your main character. He's your, or at least he's your touchstone, because he's the regular guy who, he was a drunk driver. He hit a kid, ended up in prison. But he was guilty. He did it. And the ending of Oz, nothing ends well. There is no clean wrap up for anybody. Everybody who's still alive is still in prison. Their life is crap. There's no good ending, which was, I thought, perfect. It's a show about people in prison.
Yeah.
You know, there wasn't this like great redeeming moment where suddenly several people like saw the light. All the people who saw the light got killed before the show ended.
All that's left are the terrible people.
Yeah. And that's all that was really in the show. There weren't too many characters on that show who were actually good people. Even all the guards and the warden and everybody, they were all kind of shady in some way.
I just know for a long time, like prior to Spider-Man, like Schillinger was what I thought of when I thought of J.K. Simmons.
The leader of the Aryan Brotherhood, the white racist.
And of course now,
on the show,
J.K. Simmons?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
Skoda. Oh, man. Oh, man. If you've never watched Oz, you will see that guy in a completely... If all of you have ever seen is the M&M commercials and Spider-Man and his he's the dad in Juno and like... Because he's done a lot
that's
of...
That's right.
He's done a lot of He's done a lot of really light stuff. He's done comedies and things. Watch Oz and see him be this raging, horrible racist.
Wait, were we talking about the same guy? Is this the guy in the...
The bald guy.
The farmer's insurance commercials?
I think he has done a few of those.
Yeah, a while ago, maybe.
A few of them. He does all of them. Was he Skoda on Law & Order?
I think he was on Law & Order. The psychiatrist? There's a bunch of people from Oz who ended up on Law & Order. That might be who you're talking about. Yeah, bald guy.
Yeah. No, I
like J. Jonah Jameson in the Spider-Man. Have you seen the Spider-Man movies? He was Peter Parker's boss at the newspaper, although he had hair.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why I can't remember him.
J.K. Simmons. Yeah, look him up.
I'm pretty sure
that's him. And also video game nerds.
Yes, that's him.
Yeah.
Okay, no, he was in Party Down. Remember the Super Sweet 16 party on the...
He was the dad. Yeah,
and he was the dad that just dropped F-bombs left and right. And I was like, yes, that's so awesome.
Watch Oz and see a truly despicable person.
So that was just a small sliver, a small taste of what he's like on Oz.
Because I rewatched a couple episodes, first couple episodes, and he starts out where he's a great bait and switch. They start out and he befriends Tobias, who's like the guy who has no clue what's going on. He's not a criminal. He's a lawyer who happened to drink and hit a kid. And he's getting threatened with rape by the big black guy that he's partnered up with, who's Adebisi, who's a great character as well.
Yeah.
And the one white guy comes up to him, bald dude, kind of got a paunch to him, real friendly. He's like, hey, you can just request a different cellmate. And he's like, you can do that? Sure. And he goes and he requests a new cellmate. And the whole time this is going on, the main story is on an Italian guy named Dino Ortolani, and you're led to believe he's going to be the main character. So this Beecher stuff is happening in the background. And Beecher goes off, he makes his request, the guy's like, okay, which was like a dick move on the part of the director to make this switch, because he knew what he was putting Beecher into. Beecher shows up, rolls on into the guy's bunk, into the cell, puts his stuff down, and the guy's like, I think I'm going to have to brand you. Yeah, I'm going to brand you. And he brands him with a cigarette on his ass with a swastika that night. and the show kicks off. And I'm like, when I saw that, I was like, all right, I'm in. This show is effed up. And it was a good run. Anyway.
Ended well?
It ended poorly for everybody. Poorly, it ended well for what that show should have been.
Yeah,
right. Yeah. Planned ending.
It's what the kind of ending I want to see for Breaking Bad.
Okay.
Oh, that's not going to end well at all.
It's got to end badly. Cheers? Going back to the childhood? Remember the last episode of Cheers?
I don't.
I'm not sure I ever saw it. Actually.
Usually not a big deal for sitcoms.
I know, I did,
sitcoms.
But I don't remember.
The last episode kind of wrapped up some story arcs. Rebecca got married toward the end of the run, where she was always going after the rich guy, and she ended up like marrying a plumber or something.
Wow,
like some everyman kind of character.
Okay, I do remember this.
But they spent the last whole act or two. It was just the main character.
Did Norm and Cliff get together?
No. A little bit of sweet love at the end of the bar there. You know what, Nami? No, they just basically wrapped the show out with the group of them talking around the bar. You know, it was what the show was.
Yeah.
And the final shot is Sam comes out of the office. He straightens a photo that's hanging on the wall. It's a photo of... who was it? Geronimo.
Okay.
Which is a photo that had sat in the dressing room of Nicholas Colasanto, the guy who played...
Coach,
who had died during the run of the show. He straightens that as a little nod to Coach, to the actor. And then there's a knock at the door, and he starts to walk toward it, and then he stops and says, sorry, we're closed. And that was the final episode. It was the only time they ever closed the... made a point of closing the bar on the show.
No, finale I really liked was the MASH finale. That's one of the ones I remember best. Yeah. Like, what was it? Honeycutt was resisting saying goodbye. And then, like, at the very end, there's, like, the message in the stones.
Right, so he takes
the stones. Left on the helicopter landing pad.
Yeah.
That also had the whole thing where Hawkeye
lost his mind.
Lost his mind again. That episode or that season's version of Hawkeye losing it because it happened every season.
Well, I mean that was kind
of... But it was the chicken thing where he was on the bus and he was telling his memory was of telling this old woman to silence her chicken.
The chicken, right?
Because there was the enemy. There was North Koreans. Like right there.
Right out in the woods outside.
They were in trouble. They'd be dead if these guys found them.
If they heard them,
Right. And so she
chokes the chicken. Smothering it.
She strangles the chicken to death, and what it really was she smothered her child.
Her own baby, yeah.
And that pushed him over the edge.
It was a more complete breakdown than he had ever had before.
Well, he was institutionalized.
Yeah.
And Dr. Sidney Friedman was visiting him.
That's probably my favorite character from that series, Dr. Sidney. I still remember the quote from really early in the series. Ladies and gentlemen, take my advice. Pull down your pants and slide on the ice.
Is that Alan Arbus, the actor? Didn't he die recently?
Maybe. Look it up. Let's see what else. Happy Days. Do you remember the final moments of Happy Days?
No, I don't.
Toward the end, I don't remember exactly what happened in the episode,
April 19th, he died.
Okay, I knew it was fairly recent.
Wow, he was, holy crap, 95 years old.
Oh, yeah, I think he was one of the older actors, like, in the entire series.
Good for him.
Yeah. had a long run, yeah.
Happy Days, toward the end, like, everybody's little character story arcs wrapped up. I think Fonzie was, like, engaged or was in a serious relationship or something with somebody, and Joni and Chachi got married at some point.
Was it one of the Tuscaderos?
No, the Tuscaderos, they hadn't been on the show for years.
Pinky and Leather?
Yeah. but no, at the very end of the episode, the camera closes in on Tom Bosley playing Mr. Cunningham, and he turns into the camera and addresses the viewers at home and thanks them for being a part of their family for all these years.
Oh, I do remember that, yeah.
And that wouldn't work for most shows.
No.
But given that Happy Days was all about nostalgia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And about how you were supposed to identify with this as, this is like my family, you know, where I grew up, or at least, you know, that was the hope for a lot of people.
Yeah.
The fact that the dad turned to you and said, thanks for coming along for the ride.
I think all those,
it was a nice little moment.
Those 80s shows that actually, you know, ended in the 80s and the early or the very early 90s, I think they all pretty much ended well. Like the big shows, the Cosby Show, Family Ties.
The ones that ended and didn't just peter out because they didn't get renewed.
Right. That was because that was the resurgence of like the big comedies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Night Court had an ending. Family Ties had an ending. Cosby Show. Yeah. I mean, all those, they all had real endings. And that continued through with Seinfeld and Friends. They all had real endings.
Although Seinfeld's
the long-running shows.
One of the better ones.
I
mean, what actually happened to the characters I thought was funny that they all ended up in jail because they were horrible, horrible people.
Yeah. Right.
But
it drove home the point of the characters.
Having the court case as an excuse for a clip show was just kind of...
Yeah. It was... Yeah. At the time, I was like, well, it was... At least it wasn't an actual clip show.
True.
I'll say that, because Seinfeld did that a couple of times, the real clip show. Whatever. Yeah, it wasn't awesome. Buffy ended, okay.
The final.
I thought the ending of Angel was very good.
It was okay.
I thought that every character had their thing.
Yeah.
They wrapped up some storylines, and then the real beauty of it was like Buffy tried to end on kind of this hopeful note. Whereas Angel ended with the surviving members of Angel's crew in an alley. They had just pissed off some really horrible things.
And suddenly
they didn't win. They didn't win. They lost.
And suddenly hell on earth.
Hell was coming to LA and they were getting ready to fight it again.
And they actually continued the story in comic form now.
Right.
I haven't really kept up with that, but from what I've heard, not bad.
what I've heard, it's pretty good. But there's a dragon. There's like this CGI animated dragon flying over the city, and one of the characters says, "So, Angel, what now?" And Angel's kind of like, "I kind of want to slay the dragon," and they all get ready to fight, and it closes on them like in a fighting pose.
Yeah,
like, and that's kind of the whole Angel thing, is that he's there to fight the good fight.
Speaking of series continuing in comics, the X-Files, who also had a terrible clip show courtroom based final episode. Which I hated.
Some people would say they had a 2 or 3 season crappy ending.
The actual
where it kind of petered out.
The actual ending, the final scene was good with Mulder and Scully in the hotel room on the run.
Oh, right.
Right.
Which is kind of harkened back to the very first, the pilot episode.
Yeah.
Speaking of finales,
wrapping
things up.
Yeah.
We probably should do that here.
Okie dokie. Thank you, Josh.
Thanks for having me again.
Looks like our audio is all good here. We've been testing it as we've been going.
No.
Over in the wood.
The actual wood. Thank
IKEA
you.
Table. Where can they find us?
www.nerdburgershow.com. @NerdBurgerShow on the Twitters. NerdBurgerShow on Facebook. And email us nerdburgershow@gmail.com.
Woohoo!
Give us some kind of feedback.
We got another review.
On iTunes?
On iTunes, yeah. Go read it. It's funny.
Okay.
Now I'm
not
curious.
Not going to spoil it for you.
All right.
Go read it. It's like a two-line review.
Who wrote it?
I don't
know.
Will
I know?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't recognize the name.
Okay.
Anyway.
Excellent. Yes, and review us on iTunes. 5 stars, please.
On the next episode of Nerd Burger, Mike and Craig talk about a bunch of nerdy stuff, then redact half of what they said and talk about a bunch of other nerdy stuff that people actually want to hear.
Isn't that every show?
Well, that's kind of like Xbox.
Oh. Nerd Burger 180.
Bye.
Bye.